Hi, I'm Jed Bodwin, and you're listening to Into Music from the KMUW studios, part of the NPR Podcast Network. My guest on this episode is Johnny Letira of Tough Sunshine. In this conversation, we discuss how album covers and images can inspire the imagination, the power of repetition in art, and the challenge of writing songs for specific projects. That's on Into Music, coming up now. Do you remember what your first musical memory is?
Yeah, absolutely. John Denver. There's no doubt about it. My parents listened to John Denver constantly in the house. So a lot of John Denver, a lot of Roger Whittaker. My parents were pretty square, I guess, in a way, you know. But not a lot of rock and roll stuff when I was very young. But I still am a huge fan of John Denver. I mean, I like a lot of the stuff that I remember first hearing would have been the like Rocky Mountain High record and Poems, Prayers, and Promises, that kind of stuff. I wouldn't say it had a huge influence on me what I'm doing now, but I mean, I think in a lot of ways, I mean, you know, like everything you hear influences you. Like, or I think I read this Robert Smith interview once where he said, like, they were asking him his influences. He said, like, everything I've ever heard, you know. It's kind of a cop out in a way too, but. But, you know, yeah, that would be it for sure. John Denver.
That was kind of a big one for me, too. I remember having Thank God I'm a Country Boy, if you know that tune.
Absolutely, yeah.
As a 45, and it's kind of a funny story. Our catechism teacher, I don't know if you being Italian, you were raised Catholic.
I was raised Catholic.
And so our catechism teacher said, hey, if you can think of any music that praises God, you know, bring that in. So I brought in John Denver, thank God.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, you know what? I never really thought of it as a Christian song, but I guess it, or religious song, but I guess it kind of could be. I mean, one of the things I think that I love now, where I'm at now in life with is I do spend a lot of time in nature. And that was the time, like when I was a kid, and listening to those, like looking at the record covers, like just thinking like the Rocky Mountains is a place that I'd never even see. You know, it seems so far away. I grew up in really a small town north of Pittsburgh. And I would listen to those records and look at those, you know, amazing scenes of nature and really be affected by that. And so I definitely think it's affected me musically, but also definitely in the, today, like, I mean, I realize now, like, I spend a lot of time in Maine. I go to Utah a lot. My partner's from Utah. So I'm in those places now. And it's definitely like that started then for sure.
That kind of imagination, I suppose, that, you know, probably came from looking at the record covers. And you're, of course, you're listening, but you're also developing, you're imagining these whole stories and narratives, I guess, that go with those things.
And a lot of those songs were a lot of the, you know, he did a lot. He doesn't get credit a lot of the time for a lot of the kind of story songs. I mean, I don't stand, but like, you know, I'm not a John Denver apologist necessarily, or if he need one, I don't know. I think that like his music, especially his early 70s stuff and like mid 70s stuff is a little deeper than people give it credit for. It's definitely of its time. It definitely has a lot of, you know, I mean, I'm also a huge Rush fan. So when I started listening to music, when I started listening to like stuff that I was finding, and I got super into Rush, and I feel the same way about, you know, the lyrics, I call them Trapper Keeper lyrics. They're like stuff that you would write on your notebook in high school, you know, but they work. And I love it. I love that band to this day, like unapologetically. So there's even a song on my last record called La Cucina Strangata, which is it's an instrumental. So I didn't have to write any words for it. But so, you know, I think that like a lot of that kind of imagery and stuff was important to me as a kid, you know, like for sure, like growing up. And then I started listening to more, you know, then I got into the Beatles when I was in like sixth grade. Someone brought in a record, you know, that I'd always heard of them, and I knew they were like broke up and they weren't around anymore, but I just had never really heard the actual songs, like maybe in the, you know, reruns of the Beatles cartoons or whatever. But, and then once I started listening to that, that sort of, you know, opened up everything. And then I was just, that was it. I was on my way. And a lot of the stuff I really didn't like in high school, like I hated in high school. Like I couldn't stand CCR. I couldn't stand Neil Young when I was in high school. You know, I was into punk rock stuff at that point. And I didn't realize that those, not only can those two worlds coexist, but how easily they coexist, you know, like completely. I mean, Neil Young's like, he's one of my idols. And to think there was a time when I felt the way that I felt, you know, like, oh, I don't want to hear this. And it really makes you think that it's just sort of it makes you realize it's just kind of where your head's at, you know, and what with everything in life, pretty much.
When did you kind of start with an instrument? Did you have piano lessons, or was this something where, you know, listening to the Beatles, you were like, I want a guitar?
Yeah, I got my first guitar when I was in like second grade. My parents have always been really supportive of me, and I'm very grateful for that. But I never really took lessons. I just taught myself how to play chords and whatever. I took piano lessons when I was a senior in high school from Mrs. Stickle, my piano teacher. And I think I learned Saving All My Love for You by Whitney Houston. I tried to learn it. You know, I never had a lot of diligence with practicing an instrument. I've gotten better with that as years have gone by, but I can't play piano except for what I need to do on my recordings. Like I can make pretty much what I want happen to happen. So, I mean, you've heard the record, you can be the judge. I'm certainly not going to be, you know, doing any touring sideman job as a piano player anywhere. But yeah, I took voice lessons from Jello Biafra's voice teacher as well, which is just a strange coincidence, I guess. I didn't know it at the time, but that was when I was living in San Francisco. So I've had some like formal training here and there, but not, I mean, I have worked with musicians who have, you know, actually have degrees and theory degrees and went to Juilliard and things like that. And that's not anywhere where I'm at all. But you know, I think it takes both sides sometimes. You know, I really appreciate that. I very much appreciate people who have dedicated their life to learning that stuff. But for me, it's always been about writing first, like words first. So the music for me has always kind of just been like a vehicle, I guess you'd say, for that kind of stuff. Like for that was sort of the main thing. I was very serious about going to schools for writing for poetry to like get an MFA. And then I just realized that what I liked was repetition. Even the poets that I liked were very repetitious. And I started to think I can sort of do what I do and actually write songs and have the, like what I felt I was doing was more towards lyrics than towards poetry. So that's kind of how it started. And then, you know, the rest of the time, I guess it's just been like with Tough Sunshine, it's been like an endless therapy session, I guess, you know. It's like, I don't really write love songs. I almost never write love songs. I'm not sure what they're about all the time, but I know that there's a lot of, you know, trying to sort things out, trying to like work out what's going on with me and how I relate to stuff. One of the biggest influences for me is reading fiction. Like, so my degree is in English literature, and I never did go to graduate school because I started playing in bands and I never pursued it. I've been reading some short fiction lately. I have a lot of friends who are writers and people who are in that world. So they, you know, try this, listen, you know, read this. And I've been reading Kelly Link, another woman named Claire Beams, who is actually from Pittsburgh or lives in Pittsburgh now. And they're just really exciting stuff. The Kelly Link stuff especially is really out there. Like I just kind of feel like, you know, she works with myths. So she will take the short storybook. It's sort of like myths that are being retold. So I really like the idea of working in this sort of accepted, already established genre, but taking it and making it like completely different. And that's what that's because that's really what I try to do with my stuff. Like with my music is, I don't think I'm like necessarily experimental or, you know, I don't even know what is experimental at this point. You know, I think everything's kind of been done in some way, but what excites me or music that excites me is stuff that when you hear it, it's just like, wow, this is not going in a direction I expected, you know, and that's how these stories are. So when I read those stories, I really get inspired to write. So that's been something that's really been on my mind lately anyway. Although I started reading that stuff after I finished this record. I'm not one of those kind of people that plays guitar every day or, you know, I don't write every day. In fact, I go long periods of time sometimes without either one.
It's interesting, the repetition thing, because I did get my MFA in fiction writing. I remember the second reader on my thesis, this wonderful teacher, Richard Spillman, and he kind of took me to task and he was like, what is up with this mind-numbing repetition? and there were two things. One is that I was writing about mental illness. So this idea of, you know, doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results, but also feeling very influenced by minimalist composers and the way that over time the repetition builds and builds, and then eventually you get some kind of release.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing wrong with mind numbing, you know? I mean, that's like, I mean, maybe not for fiction, but, you know, that's the thing is with music, you don't have to have your eyes open. You don't have to be reading or processing anything. And a lot of what I get, I mean, I think a lot of the problem that people have with what I do is that it's not always super melodic. It's not always, it's very, very droning. It's like, if you don't have the patience for it, I get it. I understand, but I personally love it. And the stuff that I do and the stuff that I listen to, I mean, I also love the Cars. I think the Cars are one of the greatest bands who ever lived, you know, and they're extremely pop and new wave and melodic and all that stuff. I like pop music. I like I said, these established ways of doing things, you know. I don't think you need to like tear everything up and try like really hard to make things weird. I read this interview with Kelly Link and she said something, I'm paraphrasing, but she's basically like, I'd rather read like a story that's not that well constructed and that well done, that goes in like different places that I don't expect, than something that's like perfectly written, you know? And that's how I feel about what I do.
So it sounds to me like expression was ultimately really more the thing that you were pursuing rather than a particular aesthetic. That the aesthetic kind of comes later, the expression is first. You know, if we're using this as kind of like an outlet for, you know, this is what's going on with me and stuff like that. I think there's also a moment too where maybe we kind of ask ourselves, like, does anybody care? Does this resonate with anybody? Do you remember like finding out like, yeah, actually this does matter to somebody else?
That's a really good question, because a lot of the times people ask like, what keeps you going? Like, why do you, and I always say, I really don't know the answer to that. And I'm not being glib. I don't know the answer to that. I feel like there's times, almost every time I finish a record, I don't know if I'm ever going to make another one. It's really hard. There's, you know, 10,000 records come out a month onto Spotify. It's hard to get heard. So I'm grateful for people like you who are doing this kind of stuff and, you know, giving me a chance to get the work heard, and that's really important. But as far as, you know, I guess it's when I started calling unsolicited feedback, or, you know, like when I first would hired a publicist and got like positive reviews for stuff that I did, knowing that like these people didn't know me, they weren't my friends. And that was when I was like, all right, well, I don't know if that's something that necessarily cares about. I have some people I know who wait for the new records and write to me when they come out, you know, tell me how much they like them or, you know, whatever. I don't do it to connect with people. In a sense, it's more like I'm trying to connect with myself. And if somebody's wants to like hang with that, that's awesome. One of the things that I referred to earlier was feeling a lot more free. I mean, it's really free to not be in a studio because obviously you're not paying for the time. You can record whenever you want. I tend to record really late at night. I can, you know, sort of do whatever I want to do and do as many takes as I want and just not record for a couple weeks, whatever it is. And that really just kind of gives you this like opportunity to not worry about things, not care about things in a sense. And that not caring really kind of bled into everything that I do. Like I'm at the point now where I'm just like, I don't, you know, there was a time when I would like worry, like, you know, well, would this get played on the radio? Like, would this, you know, should I shorten this bridge? Because it's, and now it's like, no way. I don't even think about that stuff. You know, I do exactly what I want to do. And it's not always like, sometimes like, do I wish I had a horn section like that would come over? That would be great. You know, like I've had that on records before. But when I'm doing everything on my own, I limit it to what I can do. So I'll use, you know, a MIDI flute, or I'll use a background vocals in a, some sort of unique way. But you know, I play everything. I do everything, and it's very freeing. And I'm kind of like, there's so much music to listen to that if it's not what you want to hear, it's not your thing. Like I get it. And the label that puts my stuff out, Declared Goods, Greg, who runs that, is such a wonderful guy. He's helped me so much. You know, he just lets me do what I want to do. He has a lot of faith in that. And it's nice because you just sort of think like, well, what I'm doing, it might not be exactly what I want it to be, but it's where I'm at right now. And with the means that I have and, you know, and working on my own, and it can bring you to some like really, really cool places that I would never have expected that I would have gone, you know, like with sound. And another thing that makes me kind of crazy that I think that a lot of people don't get anymore is that I feel like there's so few records that have dynamics and I don't mean dynamics within a song. I mean like different types or sounds of music that are going on, you know, and a lot of times that you put on a record because people want to just feel a vibe and they want to put the music on in the background, or the stuff like that I do is not like that. There's slow acoustic songs. There's weird psychedelic keyboard stuff. It's kind of all over the map. Again, not like I'm breaking any like, you know, crazy ground or anything, but it's, if anything, it goes back to when, you know, like the White Album, or when bands used to make records with different kinds of songs. And that's something I'll never, ever lose. I just don't, I that's how I write naturally. And if I want to write a song that's a country-ish song or whatever it is, I just write it. That's how it comes out. And then I worry about the organizing it when I put the record together, you know, like where is this song fit? Does it fit at all? If it doesn't fit, then it doesn't make this record. Maybe it'll make another one. There's the last song on this record. It's called I Need a Hook. I recorded that in back in the illegal loft I lived in down in Williamsburg like years and years ago. And I just always liked that recording. I always thought I'd use it for something. And when I needed a sort of a closing thing for this record, it just fit perfectly, you know? So it's nice to have that mental like freedom.
Oh yeah. I mean, it's everything. It's, you know, you mentioned Rush earlier and it's like, yes, there was variation within the albums, but I don't think that they could have thrown a song with a clarinet on it in the middle of Moving Pictures or something. And
I'd be up for hearing it.
I would too.
But there is something about like, yeah, when there aren't those expectations from outside, then anything can kind of go, right?
You start to think, like, well, am I doing this in a reactionary way? Like, okay, so if no one's going to like, you know, like listen to my music, and if I'm feeling like, you know, I'm not where I should be, then I'm just going to really do whatever the hell I want. Like, you know, is it a reactionary thing? I don't think it is, to the extent that like, because I can't like fake what I do. Like I really never can understand people who try to write in a certain way because they think it's going to allow them access to listeners, or it's going to allow them something like, I just, I, it's not like, I mean, if you can do that, like, great. That's what the bro building was. I mean, people have done that their whole forever, you know. I admire people who can do that in a sense. I just can't do it. Like, I don't know how to write in a way that's like asking for, I don't know, I'm just kind of losing my like way of describing this, because I do write very different kinds of stuff, but it's all coming from like the same place. Like, it's not like, oh, I need to write a song that sounds like this because that's what the kids are listening to or whatever, you know. It's like, but a lot of people do that and they do it successfully. So, you know, I don't know. I guess like the whole meaning of success these days is completely different than what it used to be. You know, success, I'm fortunate enough to know a lot of people who do music for a living, and that's pretty much the highest success that you can attain. And with the kind of music that myself and my peers do, you know, obviously, like, we're not writing top 40 stuff, and with how much music's coming out all the time and everything, if you're fortunate enough to keep doing it and have anybody be interested in it, I think that's like very successful. Also, keeping a band together, and although I haven't been doing the greatest job of that lately, we have a hell of a text chain going, and we text, you know, if texts were records, we'd be, I don't know, like some band that puts out a lot of records, Grateful Dead, maybe. I don't know. Yeah, so that's kind of like where it's at. I'm real happy with where I am creatively. I mean, obviously, I'd love to have more people hearing what I do, and I mean, I think most everybody feels that way. But at the same time, as I really get like honed in on what it is I'm doing, I understand why that's not the case, because I really do absolutely. Not being humble or modest when I say it's not for everybody. I get that, you know, and that's cool. That's like what makes the world go around.
There is this point, I think, where you kind of realize that there are so many different ways to exist within whatever creative pursuit you choose. You know, like in poetry, you can be a formalist, you know, you can do, you know, you can be an imagist, you can do whatever. And some people just have that way of like, they can kind of work almost like a craftsman. It's interesting. I'm listening to this new Randy Newman biography and learning about how early in his career, like, I think he got a publishing contract and they were like, oh, write a song about a football team, about the winning football team. And he could do that.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, those kinds of people are, it's awesome. And I know how hard it is, because I've been, when I lived on the West Coast, I can't remember if it was a competition or someone, I don't remember how it happened, but I was charged somehow to write a song for it had something to do with Rasputin, the record store. Like, they were going to make like a TV show, or there was, I don't remember what it was now, but they were like, you know, you need to write the song about Rasputin. And it was like, it's really hard. I don't even remember what I wrote now. I'm sure it had something to do with telling the future and what rhymes with future, that kind of stuff. But there used to be a wonderful woman named Virginia in San Francisco who would come around with tamales. Anybody who's listened to this, who ever lived in the Mission in the early 2000s, would know Virginia. And she's the tamale lady. And there's a documentary about her. And they asked like local musicians to write songs, you know, whatever, or submit music. And I've always loved, like, I'm a huge fan of like Katona Veloso, and which is fairly obvious from this last record, I think. And like, I love people who don't, especially his early records when he was writing in English for the first time. And so I wrote the lyrics and I had them translated into Spanish and then back into English again, because I wanted to have that like that wide-eyed kind of like feeling of like, this is like, you know, I'm writing in a second language. Right. I have tried to do that before, and it's really not easy. So I do respect people who can do that, you know. But I also feel like, you know, there's enough people who do that. I don't need to be one of those people. Like, there's plenty of people who are writing that, you know. It all comes down to, like, honestly, like, for me, it's trying to just be unique with what I do. And that doesn't mean, again, people get so thrown by that because they think like, well, I'm either in a band that sounds like, you know, power pop, or we're a metal band or whatever it is. And then we write in this genre And these are the kind of songs we play. And this is like the tradition. And then it ends up spawning like so much mediocrity because people think they just, well, like they can't step outside of this set of rules that exists, you know? But it's also the flip side is it has nothing to do with like being like I said, like, oh, I'm just going to light my guitar on fire and pour wax on it and like put, you know, let it feed back. And this is my like statement, which is fine too. But the point is like, you can write pop music, you can write music that's like, that comes from these genres or like, I love country music. I grew up listening to so much country music, but you can make it new in a, with the lyrics or with the instrumentation, with the production. You know, there's lots of ways that you can make music different. I came upon that realization again when I was reading that the fiction and thinking like, why do I love this? I love it because it's really out there. I mean, it's really crazy. Some of the stuff in the Kelly Link book, like the guy goes and there's a marijuana farm where like cats speak English. There's all cats working there and they speak English. Like it's really out there. It's really, really unique. And then, but it's still a fable. It's still like a myth, you know, it's still presented within this framework. And I just think that that's really great. That's kind of where I'm at right now. I rely on the framework very much. This song I'm writing needs to go to a seventh chord because that's what's been done since like the 1920s and it works. There's a reason for it. But then this song might just sound like a siren with like a electronic beat. This is my electronic beat show's phone. You know, it's like I have like an app on this phone that plays beats and I pulled it up to the microphone. That's how I recorded Vanity Matrix, the song. Like, I mean, we're not talking like high tech here, you know, it's just whatever works, like whatever I can. And, you know, I like those. I do like the limitations. I think that people can use that as an excuse sometimes. And maybe I do, but I do like the limitations. I'm not going to go and like buy another, I don't know, some synthesizer or some type of program where I can make beats and stuff. You know, I don't want to, that's not where I want to put my time. I'm glad people do it, but for what I'm doing, like this is good enough right now, you know, because I want to get to what it is I want to get to. So the music is kind of a means sometimes to the end. I don't know. That's probably quite offensive to a lot of musicians, but I don't know. That's just kind of where I stand. I it's important. And I think that you should do things with care and intent, but if there's mistakes or if the sound isn't perfect and whatever, like, I mean, I think everybody's has to be at that point by now. Right. I mean, there's, you know, so many people feel that way. This isn't anything like revolutionary by any means. I mean, you know, I think of bands like Guided by Voices, when they started doing their first records, like they sounded really rough and they sounded amazing. And I remember hearing that and just being like, this is like what I want music to sound like, you know? And those Caetano Veloso records, like the first ones, the one that's just, you know, entitled Caetano Veloso, the 71 record is like one of my favorite records. And I just love, it sounds like just a bunch of people playing together and whatever happens, there's no limits on it. And it's just, it's really inspiring to hear that.
I'm Jed Bodwin, and you've been listening to Into Music. My guest has been Johnny Latira of Tough Sunshine. The latest Tough Sunshine recording is Vanity Matrix, which is available on Bandcamp and via digital streaming services. Our digital producers are Beth Golay, Carly Cooper, and Hugo Fan. Our theme music is composed and performed by Torrin Anderson. You can learn more about this podcast at kmuw.org, and we do welcome your questions and comments via info@kmuw.org. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
We could all use a little help navigating the news these days. The Consider This podcast wants to give you a hand. 6 days a week, we'll help you make sense of the day's biggest news story and what it means for you in less than 15 minutes. Listen now to the Consider This podcast from NPR.